Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Wednesday, August the 16th, in case you didn't know. And we appreciate you listening to AFR. Joining me in studio is Ed Battagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Delight to be here, but I move that we move the show outside today.
Oh,
okay. Our listeners in Texas are not going to like this.
Yeah, we're experiencing beautiful weather here where we live
today. 65 this morning when I went out for my walk. It was delightful.
It's 75 degrees right now.
Most humans don't like it being rubbed in their face.
Well, Fred started it.
But Fred's just thankful.
He has
a thankful heart.
That's right.
That where he lives,
yes,
is beautiful weather. So, yes. You know, we can't control the weather, right?
So most human beings don't like having something rubbed in their face. Also, most human beings enjoy rubbing something in someone else's face.
Especially sports fans.
Yes.
Huh? That's right.
Where we are here in Tupelo, Mississippi, the high today is 82.
Yeah. That's highly unusual for August in the South.
So somebody in this studio is living right, I would say.
Let's take a vote.
It's not me.
No, it's not you. Let's cast. What do you call them in the Bible?
Casting pearls before swine.
No, draw straws.
Draw straws.
Draw straws to find out who's living right. Let's reverse Jonah here. Anyway, this is a pleasant, very pleasant day, almost fallish for us here, but our friends in the southwest part of the country and the heartland experiencing a severe heat wave, and we feel for those folks. Let's see. Now, you said, Ed, you sent me something yesterday, I guess it was, that I'm looking to see.
Yeah, Texas.
Today's 97. I'm just using Dallas as an example.
Oh, yeah.
And then tomorrow begins 108. 110, 108, 107, 105 for the folks in Texas and I guess Oklahoma too. But you were saying that this isn't the first heat wave that Dallas has experienced.
Yeah, I was curious as to the number of consecutive days for over 100 degrees in Dallas. I picked Dallas out of Texas because my sister lives there. And so this is not the first time they've had this. In fact, back in 1980, they had 43 consecutive days of 100 plus. And in 2011, they had 73 days of consecutive over 100 degrees. And I forget what it has been here in Dallas. You said today it's not going to be over
97. Yeah. A very, very pleasant 97.
Very pleasant. So I guess what I was getting at is that people will say, "Well, it's climate change," and yet I've read where people are saying this is the hottest summer ever. Then other people come along
in
and say,
"U.S., you mean, or in
the U.S.?"
Yeah.
And so other people respond to that. Well, it's not the hottest summer in Brazil. In fact, they've had unusually cool weather.
Right.
But then you can go back to the 1920s and 1930s. So this becomes kind of subjective, but it is a narrative that is being spread by those
who believe
in climate.
But you're saying even in the last 30 years, there have been hotter summers on record.
Last 40 years.
That's 40 years.
Yeah, if you go back to 1980.
That's before we even started hearing about global warming.
Right.
Pretty much.
So, I'm not saying that maybe the Earth is getting slightly warmer, but the question is it man-made? We've had this argument many, many times before, and I look for the alternative explanation when people start. I've been watching on the news, the weather. They are actually using different colors now to represent the temperatures. When they have the big map of temperatures,
mm-hmm.
instead of using blues and greens and some yellows and reds, it's all yellows, oranges, and reds. It looks hotter just on the map.
Right.
But the temperatures don't necessarily show that.
But fear not. Fear not.
Yes.
The Biden administration has now spent earmarked $1 trillion.
A trillion? For what?
For climate change. So he's
they're going to change the climate.
Yeah, Joe Biden is going to stop it.
Stop what?
He's going to stop all of these hot temperatures.
Oh, it's the hot temperatures.
Okay. Yeah.
I saw somebody, and I forget who this was. This goes back about a month, so that's, past yesterday. I can't always remember the details. But I saw somebody challenging one of these climate change people. It was on a news program, and I believe it was a lady. And she was asked, okay, if we do everything your organization is saying we should do, mm-hmm. how much would it change the temperature? And she never could answer it. No. And they never can answer it. So, okay, you want to disrupt our economy, but you can't even tell me how much it'll lower the temperature?
Yeah, I'll tell you how they answer it. I'm talking about the climate change activist. Here's how they answer it. Well, 10 years from now,
yes,
the polar ice cap's going to, the North Pole's going to melt. Okay, we get 10 years down.
Right.
10 years down the road, that same person is on TV answering a question. They're going to say, well, I'm just telling you, 10 years from now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you put it out there just on the edge where people feel like, man, if I'll just, start riding a bike instead of using an SUV. Yeah. I can save the planet within 10 years.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I don't believe them. Al Gore, the father of the climate change movement, formerly known as global warming.
Yeah.
Remember he said that the iceberg, that polar ice cap was going to melt within
right.
so-and-so years. Well, that's come and gone by a long shot.
Yeah.
So this is
why should we believe him now?
This is God's planet that he created special.
Right.
And
right.
as far as we can tell in the whole universe and, where life can be sustained, it gets me. I watch these reports from these, I don't know what you call them, spaceships that they send to Mars and to observe the planet and other places. And which I'm intrigued by. I like watching that and hearing about it. But it's always there may have been water, on Mars many millions of years ago.
Yeah,
and I'm like going. So you're telling me we spent how much money for you to tell me there may have been water
right.
on Mars because there's a little crater there?
Yeah,
it's just absurd.
Well, I'm all in favor of developing new technologies. I think that's smart.
Right.
Okay, that's just wise. That's part of the advancement
You're progressive.
Of scientific knowledge. Good. Okay, but I don't want our economy, I don't want to be thrown back into the 1850s because I like air conditioning. I don't want to be Little House on the Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, I want to buy incandescent light bulbs. I think they're cheaper, and I think they technically, I've been personally, my experience, I think they last as long maybe even longer, and you can take one out of the socket and throw it in the garbage can without worrying that it's going to burst and have fumes of deadly gas coming out and killing the family.
Yeah,
all right. But now I can't buy incandescent light bulbs because Joe Biden said I couldn't, and I'm sick of it.
Are you going to take it?
And I'm announcing I'm running for office.
I'm Ed Battagliano, and I approve this message right here. All right, Brad. So
we actually have news that we were going to discuss.
Yeah, but
on a more serious note, we continue to see what is happening in Maui, in Hawaii. By the way, the president just announced a few moments ago that he's heading to Maui on Monday, he and the First Lady, and will meet with survivors there. He has been the subject of some criticism up to now and how he has responded to the tragedy there in Maui. A couple of times he has said no comment when asked about it. I'm not sure why he did that. Some people are trying to say, well, maybe he didn't understand the question. But the question pretty simple. Do you have any reaction to what is happening in Maui? Anyway, he and the First Lady are heading down there on Monday. But the news from there this morning, the death toll is now at 106. The crews have the gruesome task of going through the burn area now. They do believe that there could be as many as 2,000 others that may have perished in this. It is, of that 106 number that we were given this morning, they're saying only five of those have been clearly identified who they are. And that is, we are left to believe that the bodies that they are discovering are so badly burned. That is why they are asking survivors from the area to come and give DNA samples so that they can use that to identify the bodies that they come across. It is just a horrible scene. That's the bottom line.
This is it's a good word. This is a horrifying, horrific tragedy. And folks, we've all been, if you've been paying attention to the story, we've all been imagining what it would be like to be in a corner of an island and having nowhere to go as a wall of fire is coming towards you and your loved ones.
Except the ocean.
And
nowhere to go
the
except
ocean.
The ocean.
That's right. And so there with potentially 2,000 who
are missing.
Who are missing, probably all dead.
Yeah.
Now, we talked about this morning in our story meeting, maybe a small percentage of those have just been displaced, have no way to contact family, so they are literally missing but alive.
Yeah.
But that's probably a very small percentage. And I think you looked it up this morning. This is a town of 17,000?
Lahaina, and it's a 13,000.
13,000. So
yes.
If there's 2,000 folks possibly dead because of this tragedy, that is a huge chunk of the population of a town.
Yes.
Wow.
So appeals are going out, obviously, for help across America. I think there are organizations, the Southern Baptist Convention, Samaritan's Purse, 8 Days of Hope. Other organizations are just starting to gather resources together to help these dear folks. Several hundred have now found at least temporary dwelling in hotels, Airbnbs, that kind of thing. But there's still much help that's going to be needed. What they're saying, and it's true, we've seen this before, you know, when tornadoes go through an area here in the mainland, it takes years. They are talking years and years in this area of Maui, in particular Lahaina, before that town is able to even start to recover from this. So keep these folks in our prayers. Churches down there are doing their very best to help out. And, obviously I think there'll be churches here in America that will really get active. I know our church had a mission team that went to Hawaii this summer to do vacation Bible school. So I know there are many, many other churches that will be doing the same thing. They already have contacts with people there in Hawaii, and they'll be there to help out. Now's the time.
Yeah, very, very. I mean, you see these pictures, and it's not going to be a recovery. From what I've seen, it's going to be a complete rebuild for the whole area, the whole town. And that was I've never been there. I've been to Oahu, that's in Honolulu, and been around that island, but I've never been to Maui. But just looking at the pictures and reading about that, it was a kind of an authentic Hawaiian town, not necessarily, quote, just touristy.
Right.
You know, with a lot of local mom and pop shops and so forth and so on. So It's you know, what it will be rebuilt as, probably it'll lose a lot of its authentic charm.
Yeah.
I think I know that's way down the totem pole when we're looking at lost human lives, but I'm just looking forward when I see these pictures. I'm going, there's, you know, the whole place was, what's the word, raised?
Yeah, R-A-Z-E-D.
Mm-hmm. And just like we said before, the word incineration.
Right.
I mean,
and that's what it looks like. And it looks like the for a campfire where everything is charred and ash.
Yeah, and the civil defense warnings didn't go off. Civil defense warnings, is that what you call them? You know, the sirens.
right.
that typically warn people about an emergency or an impending danger that every community has, they didn't go off.
No.
They didn't go off. And so there was no warning. And then, they, like you said, trapped a lot of them.
Yeah.
Had no place to go but the ocean.
Yeah.
And am I understanding correct? There were, like, at the time this was happening, 70, 80 mile an hour winds?
Because there was a hurricane going across the south end of the island, high pressure above it, so it squeezed everything down, which caused the winds to be so high.
Right.
Yeah.
You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Abraham Hamilton III will be with us at the bottom of the hour. Go ahead, Steve. I mean, what's your name?
Fred.
George. Paul Ringo.
Okay, wow.
There was no Steve in that bunch.
Hey, Jude.
That was good, Ed.
All right.
Okay, let me reset that.
I am a genius.
Back to you, Fred.
All right. Brand new Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs poll out this morning. And a big political question right now. Now that former President Trump has been charged in a fourth venue, that being Georgia, earlier this week, how is the country feeling about Donald Trump? And this poll says the country is divided. And amongst Democrats, probably 85% think he's guilty, shouldn't run for president again. But amongst Republicans, his strength, his popularity is still very strong. 7 out of 10, according to this AP NORC poll, saying they still support the former president. So lots of talk about, you know, what is the impact of all of this? Former Speaker Newt Gingrich was asked about this. This is a country badly divided. One of the elements right now is, what about Donald Trump? Listen to what he had to say, and he really kind of narrows in on a lot of Americans are very upset with what they see as a two-tier justice system, one that favors the Democrats, one that's against Republicans. But have a listen to what Newt Gingrich had to say. Cut number one.
It is Barack Obama who corrupts the Justice Department. It is Hillary Clinton who routinely breaks the law and gets away with it. And now we have Joe Biden who's learned. He's learned from Obama that doesn't matter what you do, if you're a liberal Democrat, you will not be prosecuted. He learned from Hillary that a person in high public office can get millions and millions of dollars. And they learned from watching Donald Trump that a true outsider willing to take on the entire system could destroy their entire machine. So what you're seeing across the country is a desperate last-ditch effort by a corrupt machine to destroy their most dangerous opponent in a way which not only breaks the Constitution, destroys the rule of law, and establishes a moment of bitterness, which I think will last for a generation or more. I think this is going to be a horrendous period, and we just need to understand. The people who want to control America and dictate to the rest of us will break any law, lie about any topic, and manipulate the system any way they can, and that includes a lot of the elite news media.
There you have it.
Well,
it's hopeless. Let's just close it down. If you believe everything he just said, literally.
I don't disagree with what the former speaker said in terms of the grim time we're in. I don't know if time can be grim. This is a very difficult
You're
season.
Giving me a spark of hope now.
Are you a spark of hope? Okay. Well, here's the thing. We are divided, and I will say this. This, I think, approaches the division in our country in the days of slavery before the Civil War. And the reason I say that is because with slavery, and I remember reading, not hearing, but reading the speech by Abraham Lincoln when he was kind of his House Divided speech, where he said, these are basically, I'm paraphrasing, that we are so divided, but it's not just division, it is two mutually exclusive ways of looking at the world. Hmm. You can't have a country that is pro-slavery and anti-slavery, all right? And his speech, he said, we're going to have to become all one thing or all the other. And even beyond the 1960s, when the country was polarized over, for example, the Vietnam War, we shared a lot of common values. We looked at the world basically the same way, but we're more like the pre-Civil War time because these are what we see in our country are two mutually exclusive views about life. And Tim, you've said it's God haters and those who either love God or see the world from a biblical perspective, whether or not they're Christians. You cannot reconcile these two ways of looking at the world. So we're going to have to become all one thing or all the other. And that is the battle that we're fighting right now. We're fighting to determine whether we're going to remain a constitutional republic with rights that are given by God and defended by government, or where we have a anti-God country where the state grants the rights and can take them away. So it is grim, but to me, the decision has not yet been made, and that's why we're in the fight. All right, that was about 5 minutes.
Well, yeah, we can't give up, can't quit, can't stop. No. I mean, what are we going to? Where are we going to go? As I said, right. I've written a book. I'm going to write a book called "Nowhere Else to Sail to," because this is. I don't see anywhere to go start over. You know what I'm saying? So we've got to work as hard as we can to save our country. I do think there's a lot of hopeful signs, especially in the red states.
Yes.
Right. These deep blue states, they're going to collapse. They're collapsing before.
They're going to learn the hard way.
Yeah, they're collapsing before our very eyes. So I don't think it's hopeless. I do hear what the former speaker is saying. Absolutely. There's as you just cited, the political divide in this country is just. It's a you've called it a zero sum game. There's no yellow dog Democrats anymore.
Right.
What you call there? In other words, there are no conservative. Very few. Joe Manchin.
Yeah.
We mention his name every time. Why? Because he's the only one.
Right.
That would be considered a fair or conservative, fairly conservative.
Yeah.
By Democrat standards. And so you have to choose your team. Republican or Democrat, at least in Washington, D.C., this isn't necessarily true across the country, although it's going this way. And then you defend them to the hilt, right or wrong.
You know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., we mentioned him on this show before, he's considered too moderate for most Democrats.
Who's that?
Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Yeah.
Now, he's kind of like that old school liberal and a Democrat. His views, I would probably disagree with. Probably 80% of his views, certainly on cultural issues. But I don't think a guy like that has a chance in today's Democratic Party because they've moved so far to the left to become almost a radicalized party. So I appreciate what the
we've become very polar. So we've become very polarized, and I don't know where this is going to end up.
But I'm with you on here's where the hope is. Democrat policies when it comes to filth in our school libraries, and parents are fighting back. The whole transsexual issue.
Right.
You know, guys who say they're girls going on girls.
Soft on crime.
This has ignited a good portion of America.
Yeah.
And that has become a battleground that is being fought very well. And even Democrat parents are joining with Republican parents and saying enough is enough. So I think they've overplayed their hand on a couple of fronts.
Yeah, I think there's always hope with God.
Absolutely.
Right? Amen?
Yep.
Amen. So we can't give up. Got to keep proclaiming. First and foremost, our job is to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ to our fellow Americans and the world. That's first and foremost, and that'll never be a mission that we should give up on, right?
We got a preacher coming up, Abe Hamilton.
We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
Some of our children have been cheated. They have the best chance at a good education, and countless opportunities belong to them in the business world. They have never had a time in history when their chance of making a good living was as good as it is right now. But they're cheated, robbed, and it is the parents who are to blame. Back during the Vietnam War, a young soldier named Terry J. lay wounded and near death. He was caught in a battle and saw no way to escape alive. So, following what he considered to be his final living minutes, he wrote a letter to his mother. The Bristol, Virginia Herald Courier carried the letter later. Here's what he said. Dear Mother, you let us down. You never taught us to pray, and you never even sent us to Sunday school where somebody else could have done so. Yet there I was, right on the brink of eternity, and I didn't even know how to commence or what to say to the Lord. So please correct this error before Bud and Sis get away from home. Luckily for me, our chaplain has befriended me, but it's an awful sensation to face death and not even know how to speak to God. I didn't make it up. I just clipped it from the paper. And the story's true. It happened just that way. So you see, some of our children are cheated. And we parents are the ones to blame. Shame on us for giving our children everything in life except that which they shall eternally need. Shame on those of us who call ourselves parents and yet raise our children ignorant of life's greatest riches. Twice shame upon us. We're guilty, and the error is on our record. Another soldier wrote the following poem. It too speaks of the way our children are cheated. Look, God, I've never spoken to you, but now I want to say, how do you do? You see, God, they told me you didn't exist, and like a fool, I believed all of this. Last night from a shell hole, I saw your sky. I figured right then they'd told me a lie. Had I taken the time to see the things you made, I'd know they weren't calling a spade a spade. I wonder, God, if you'd shake my hand. Somehow, I feel that you understand. Funny, I had to come to this hellish place before I had time to see your face. Well, I guess there isn't much more to say, but I'm glad, God, I met you today. I guess the zero hour will soon be here, but I'm not afraid since I know you're here. The signal? Well, God, I'll have to go. I like you lots, I hope you know. Looks like this will be a horrible fight. Who knows? I may come to your house tonight. Though I wasn't friendly with you before, I wonder, God, if you'd wait at the door. Look, I'm crying. Me, shedding tears. I wish I'd known you these many years. Well, I'll have to go now, God. Goodbye. Strange, since I met you, I'm not afraid to die. I didn't make the poem up. It was found on a 19-year-old soldier in Vietnam. The sad part is that he was dead. Indeed, many parents have cheated their children.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
In him we were also chosen, having been predestined according to the plan of him who works out everything in conformity with the purpose of his will. Ephesians 1:11.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, and Fred, we thank you for listening to AFR. Our good friend and colleague, Abraham Hamilton III, joins us now in studio. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning.
Having a good day so far?
I am.
Amen. If you weren't, I don't know that I want to hear it, but but you know how we Americans are. We want to say how you doing, but we don't want to hear it if you're not doing it.
Yes.
Well, go talk to somebody else. All right. So, Abe.
Yes.
Your background obviously is in law, so we have some and constitutional law. We have some questions for you, Mr. Counselor.
Yes, sir.
First one we want to Ed. We were talking about it. The when a person that's indicted has to go, as President Trump is, has been, with 17 other people, right?
18.
18 other people. Okay. When you're indicted and you have to go, so the DA in Atlanta, the Fulton County, has said, I'm going to give everybody to a week from Friday, whatever that is, a week.
It'll be the 25th, August 25th.
To turn themselves in voluntarily, which they all will. Now, when you're indicted, you don't get a – do you get a mug shot and do you get an orange jumpsuit to wear for – I mean, these kind of crazy pictures on the internet. What's the truth there?
No, not automatically. Indictments come in all different times. Sometimes you have people who are arrested and are incarcerated before they're indicted. In situations like this, you have what's called a non-arrest indictment. Nobody's in custody physically at the time of
because
indictment.
Because it's not a violent act
exactly
that they've committed. Okay, go
right
ahead.
Yeah, and so the expectation and the anticipation of an orange jumpsuit and a mugshot wouldn't apply in this particular circumstance. It shouldn't apply unless you have someone trying to grandstand, because this is a non-arrest indictment. You know, when you operate in jurisdictions like Fulton County or like I did in Harris County, you have indictments happening every day. Every day, and you have both.
But you get a mugshot, but you don't have to put on an orange jumpsuit.
No,
that's for prisoners, right?
That is for prisoners, and that's a feature of being processed in the jail. The purpose of the mugshot is for record keeping for the jail. It's not for
the sheriff in Fulton County has said he will get a mugshot. Talking about Donald Trump,
unless he's told differently, is what he said.
Yeah, that's true.
What he said was,
"Is it going to happen?"
He said, was asked, "Will the former president get a mugshot?" And he said, the sheriff of Fulton County said, he will be treated like every other person who comes through here unless I'm told differently. That's what it is. So he may be told, don't get a mugshot.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
And that procedure is appropriate in normal circumstances, but this is rather abnormal.
Well, if I'm the other 18, I'm going, well, Trump's not getting one. I'm not getting one.
Right.
I don't want one either. Right. Who wants a mugshot, right? Now, Tom DeLay, the former Speaker of the House from Texas, he has the best-looking mugshot of any.
Full-on smile.
You remember him?
I remember very well.
I met him a couple times. Great guy when I met him, and he did some wonderful things while he was House Speaker, known as the Hammer. But he got in trouble for something, but it was overturned on appeal, I think. But he had a mugshot, and he was in a nice suit and tie, and smiling ear to ear, grinning ear to ear.
So he looked like a greeter at Walmart.
I'm getting they don't wear suit and ties though.
Well,
Ed.
That's true.
Walmart. We just wondered what will be the procedure. So it's yet to be determined whether these folks will get a mugshot, but they're certainly not going to get an orange jumpsuit, as some memes have put out there. Okay, now. We're going to change topics here because this is the area that most people don't understand, including I have questions myself. Electors, right? When we have a presidential election, you keep up with how many electoral college votes a candidate has. And in order to, I know I'm being elementary here, but just maybe there are people who are new to listening to us and they don't really understand how all this works. So I'm going to tell you as much as I know. So we don't have a democracy in America. We have a representative republic or a constitutional republic. So we don't have majority vote.
It's not a direct democracy.
Not a direct. So you get each candidate, let's say Republican, Democrat in a presidential election, or you could have an independent or a Green Party or whoever, Libertarian or whoever. But if you win a state, you get their electoral college votes. And it's winner take all. It's not proportional. It's winner take all. And so you have to get to 270. That's the magic number to be declared president of the United States, right? Mm-hmm. So that's called the electoral college votes. Mm-hmm. Then those votes have to be counted and certified by the states, counted, sent to Washington, D.C., and then have to be you have to go through the process, right? Like Vice President Pence did on January the 6th, right? The infamous day. So tell me now, do 270 plus people have to go to Washington, D.C. and walk in the halls of Congress and go, hey, I'm Bill. I'm an elector from Tennessee. Where do I sit? I mean, you understand how
not today,
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, how does this
yeah.
work?
So you're right. This is one detail I would add. First of all, the Constitution gives states the authority to determine how the Electoral College votes will be cast, right? All states do, as you said, winner take all based on the popular vote in the state, except for Nebraska that does it based on congressional districts. So you can
what's wrong with those people?
Hey, they like their corn.
Why do they have to be different?
They like their corn and they like the husket.
I'm just teasing Nebraska. I'm just teasing Nebraskans.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can have a situation where you can have a split of electoral votes in the state of Nebraska because
right.
that's how the state has determined they will govern the Electoral College votes, which they have the prerogative
But that's
to do.
The only state that does
that's the
it
only
that
state
way.
That, that's
Everybody
only
else is winner take all.
Yes. Beyond that, what most people don't realize, when you go to vote on Election Day, like harken back to 2020, November 3rd, 2020, when people went to the ballot box to vote, they did not vote for the president, as that is commonly understood. They voted for the electors of their presidential candidate. If you looked at your ballot, it would say electors for. Electors is normally in smaller print. The presidential candidate's name are in larger print, but it says electors for Donald Trump or electors for Ice Cream Man. And so when those votes are cast on November 3rd, that is what's tallied. On November 3rd, or if you are in Philadelphia or in Georgia or somewhere
Come on,
else.
Abe. You want us to get sued? You've heard of Fox paying Dominion, haven't you?
What? I didn't finish the thought. I don't know what you're talking about.
I'll have to inform our attorney of what
steak.
You said here today.
Yeah, you let him know.
Okay, I'll come to your office and tell you what you said. Okay, go ahead.
But so that is what happens on November 3rd. What transpires between there and ultimately like January 6th is the state certifying the tally of how many votes were cast for which electors. That is then certified by the states, transmitted to the federal government in sealed envelopes, which is what the vice president counts on certification day, January 6th. So that's how all of that transpires.
Can I just stop you just really quickly and let me ask?
Yes.
So in the state of, let's say, well, I'll skip Nebraska. I was going to use Nebraska. Like Iowa. Mm-hmm. So all the electors get together and they officially cast their votes?
In the state, before the state legislature, depending on how the legislatures of the various states determine how they do it.
And so then that's recorded.
That's recorded.
So you talk about a slate of electors or electors. Mm-hmm. Iowa has, so Ed Vitagliano's name is down as an elector for President Trump.
That's right. And that's identified prior to the November election. So let's, just to make this plain, Adam is running for office. Two of us are identified as electors for Adam. The other two are identified as electors for Brent.
Okay.
All right? So when the November 3rd ballots are cast, they're cast for either electors for Adam or electors for Brent. So that then they convene at the state level to formally say our electoral votes in the state of AFR, we have four of them. They're going to go to Brent or Adam, whatever.
So that's why when Donald Trump won his election, there were, Hollywood stars or whatever. In 2016, they were pleading with electors in Iowa, for example, and saying, vote according to your conscience. You're supposed to be an elector for Donald Trump, but don't put that man in office. That's what happened.
That's exactly right.
But that didn't happen.
But it didn't happen.
It did not happen.
So I know everyone's got questions. I'm just going to jump
in. Go ahead and hog the time.
I mean, accusation about a false slate of electors, that's on the January 6th side, and I think here in Georgia.
Yes.
What is that accusation, and did it happen?
Yeah. So the characterization of counterfeit or illegitimate elections, in my view, is hyperbole. Because the entire purpose, well, let me say it this way. The entire thrust of the concern was the Trump campaign was saying that the election was not up to snuff. So as a result, in order to preserve their ability to challenge the election in some states, the law required them to have Trump electors participate in the process parallel to Biden electors. This is their argument. Again, if they're wrong, they're misguided, whatever. The question is whether or not the actions that they took, is that criminal? Are they wrong? Is this inaccurate? Is this imprecise? Those are not things that rise to the level of criminality. So I have characterized the January 6th related indictment by Jack Smith at the federal level and this Fannie Willis indictment as just being as equally vacuous as the Alvin Bragg indictment, because you're literally attempting to criminalize the practice of law as well as the ability to challenge an election if you think something is wrong.
So, again, I don't want to hog it, but what President Trump did following the false results in some of the states is he said, for example, in Pennsylvania, all right, yes, the state has already certified electors to vote for Biden, but we think the results of the election are the opposite. Therefore, we're putting forward electors to vote for Trump because we think when all is said and done, the results of the election will be reversed, and therefore, these are the electors who should be counted. Is that what happened?
Yes. And the only thing I would add is that the efforts to intervene predate certification by the states and post-date certification by the states. So there were efforts to say, listen, Pennsylvania, you should not certify Biden electors because things are not up to snuff. Then, after certification, Pennsylvania, you shouldn't have certified, but now that you have, you need to look at having these other electors to participate in the processes, because ultimately we believe it's going to be revealed that the election wasn't up to snuff. And so these things need to be in place in order to maintain the ability to challenge what I'm representing to you is an illegitimate.
And that's not illegal to do that.
And it's not illegal to do that. It's happened in our nation's history multiple times. 1860, Samuel Tilden versus Rutherford B. Hayes. Literally, several states had dueling electors to travel to Congress to participate in the Electoral College tally. You know, it happened again in 1960.
All right, my question.
So I'm done. I'm done.
So it's left to me to play the liberal.
Yeah, you all right. You play
Thank
the
you,
liberal.
Ed.
Thank
okay.
you.
Okay. I'm not. We can take a test on who's further to the right here.
Okay.
Okay. It's going to be a real shootout. But in order for us to understand the issue, I think oftentimes, as you do in law school, you have to at least take a look at what the other side says.
Absolutely.
So that you can defeat their arguments.
Right.
Okay. So when I ask the questions I'm about to ask and say the things I'm going to ask, don't post on Facebook that Tim is a commie or don't ever give to AFR anymore because
right.
Tim's a whatever.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Okay. Well, yeah. You can do it if you want to, but we'll block you. But anyway, we'll cancel you. Okay. No. I have to preface this.
Right. No,
I understand.
When I've mentioned things before here, sometimes people they lose it.
Yeah,
you're against Trump. You hate Trump. No. I voted for the guy twice.
Right.
I wrote a column in our magazine that went to 150,000 people where I praised President Trump. This is after January 6th.
Right.
For what he did and what he stood for and what he accomplished. So I do not in any way I was never a never Trumper.
Right.
I was never a never Trumper. I had to come around to him, but when he committed to appoint pro-life judges and conservative judges to the federal court and to the Supreme Court, I was on board, 100%. He won the nomination, and we know what happened, and he had a very successful presidency, in my view, for the most part, okay?
Yeah.
Any president, you're going to have some disagreements with here and there, but I'm saying, so that's the backdrop. I just feel the need to say that.
Yeah.
Because I've gotten 4 or 5 emails. Tim, I'm not supporting y'all anymore because you hate Trump. And I'm saying, what? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I want people to understand that, okay?
Yeah.
Now.
So go ahead.
I've just offered a defense for myself before I ask these questions. Okay. Now, all the states had certified the election. Am I right?
No, you're right.
Okay.
Before January 6th.
Before January 6th. Mm-hmm. So all the court cases that Trump's attorneys tried to bring across the country had been adjudicated, most of them dismissed for lack of standing. Is that right?
No. I wouldn't say for lack of standing. And
okay, but that's really not my point.
Right, I get you. Yeah, adjudicated. None of them were heard on the merits.
The Supreme Court of the United States said it's over. It's done. We're not getting involved in this anymore. Okay? Am I right about that?
Yes.
Okay. So that all had happened prior to January the 6th, true?
Yeah.
And over the objection of Alito and Clarence Thomas, they said we should get involved.
Okay. Well, Alito could have got involved earlier on Pennsylvania long before the election, which could have, I don't know. Do you remember that story? We don't have time to digress there.
I do remember that.
Okay. So, if the election had been certified by all 50 states, the Supreme Court had ruled that it's said and done, thus be it the election stands, we're not getting involved. That, to me, is the end of the road. Okay, when you lose a ball game and you feel like the ref blew the call, you know, you go shake the hand of the other fella, other player, you walk off the field, you may go, man, we were robbed. But you know what? It's the game is over. And you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm not meaning to equate a football game.
No, I understand what you're saying.
But you understand what I'm saying. We all have things in life that happen to us where we go, I was done wrong or this was an injustice. But what do? You have to move on.
Right.
Well, President Trump did not move on.
True.
Okay? He did not move on from after everything I just said was already settled. All 50 states had certified their votes. The Supreme Court had ruled. And yet he goes before people on January 6th and says, it's all up to Pence. Pence can save the day for us. If he does it, we win. That's what he said. Mm-hmm. We win. Go down there and stop the steal. Then he said peacefully and patriotically. So he didn't, I don't think he had any intention to encourage those people to go into the Capitol. But I'm just saying he
said protest peacefully and patriotically.
Yeah. Protest, but he did go say stop the steal. I don't know how that would be interpreted in some people's minds. But I'm just saying that to me, and I know some people disagree, that's the end of the road right there. That's when you concede, even though you don't like it. And for the peace of the country, you say, okay, I don't like the way this ended. I don't like the way it went down. But the Supreme Court has spoken, and the states have certified their results. And I've challenged everything I could. And so I'll be back, to borrow from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
I'll be back.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. And what I'm saying to you is there half the country or more would take the viewpoint that – that I've just expressed. The other half would say, I guess keep it going. So the Electoral College voted. I mean, the electorate. Now President Trump, he wants to. Anyway, what have I said that you disagree with?
The only thing I would say is that the end of the road wasn't prior to January 6th. Jack Smith's indictment attempts to convey Mike Pence's role on January 6th as being merely ceremonial. That is not accurate constitutionally. And in fact, I can demonstrate evidence for that because after the January 6th incident, the Democrat-controlled Congress very quietly passed legislation to try to further define the role of the vice president in the certification of Electoral College votes. So that is an implicit admission that at a minimum, the function of the vice president serving as president of the Senate, presiding over the ultimate, not certification of Electoral College votes, but certification, the tally of the votes by the federal government, there was at a minimum ambiguity concerning the vice president's role. Now, I do not believe that the vice president had the authority to reverse the results. But if the vice president prior to January 6th had any indication that any of the state certifications had questions about them, he had the wherewithal to send it back to the state to say, I need you guys to address this
prior Did the states have questions? I don't remember any states that had questions.
Well, and that is the question. Ed
the liberal just asked.
Well, no.
liberal has switched to Tim's no longer the liberal. Ed is.
Hey, give me that hat.
Well, you had North Carolina, where the Republican-led legislature instituted lawsuits concerning whether or not the state court had the authority to change the time, manner, and place of the election. You had litigation beginning to percolate in Pennsylvania concerning that same issue. So you had the potential for additional questions, which is why I believe that you had others, lawyers and others, advising the president that, well, the vice president's role.
What if the vice president and the president disagree?
And then the president has no wherewithal to try to force the vice president to do anything else.
So what are you saying that Vice President Pence should have done?
If I were Vice President Pence, I would have sent back several states, because the categorization or the description of the election as being fraudulent, I think it's an overbroad assessment. I think you had clear constitutional questions where you had places like North Carolina, places like Pennsylvania and others, where changes were made to how the election was conducted without the legislature. That alone raises questions.
And that's what the law said. The law said the legislature has to change it.
Exactly. That alone is enough to say, hey, I'm not sure. I need this I can be sure.
But what if Vice President Pence didn't buy that?
Right. And then,
is that a legitimate thing? What if Vice President Pence said, you know what? Carolina has sent in their votes. They're certified.
And so I
don't have the authority to say, well, I don't buy that. I'm sending it back.
Yeah. And so
I see what you're saying, exactly what you're saying. But I'm just saying, do we want Kamala Harris? If Biden loses the election, we want Kamala Harris saying, you know what? I'm sending all these certifications for these states back to these 8-10 states, and because I don't agree with them, and I think there was some shenanigans at one. Well, would we be good with that?
I wouldn't be good with Kamala Harris doing that.
Or any vice president.
I'm
just talking objective black letter law.
No, I understand.
I'm not saying
I appreciate
whether
that.
You should do it or you shouldn't do it, whether it's good or it's bad. I'm just talking about what could be done. The same thing was attempted. This people forget. Maxine Waters asked for the exact same thing in 2016.
But was unsuccessful.
Was unsuccessful.
Because? Who was it at the end?
Barack Obama's vice president.
Joe Biden.
Joe Biden refused to do what Maxine Waters is asking him to do.
So Joe Biden said, I can't overturn the results.
I don't know what he said. He just didn't do it. Right. But it didn't get nearly the media attention that this is. But he did not do what was being requested.
And there is, I understand what you're saying about quietly Congress changed or made it clearer what the vice president can and can't do. Now, there are some who think, and you do apparently, that that implies that the vice president did have the authority to do it. But I have heard people, obviously it's from the other side, who said, well, what Congress actually did was they got worried that what the vice president was asked to do, Mike Pence, was stretching the law, and therefore we wanted to clarify that that's not. But you would disagree with that.
I would completely disagree with that, because if you do a little research, those are some of the same people that are in favor of court packing.
Yeah, no, it's it is when you get the further away you get from the rule of law, which is where we're speeding. Maybe we're already there. The law, the words don't mean anything to anyone. It's just how successful we are in twisting them to validate doing what we want to do.
All right, watch this. Okay.
Yeah.
I was the liberal. Then you were the liberal. I'm tagging. Hey, tag, you're it. You're the liberal, Ed. Hey.
I don't think that's how it works.
No, I don't think so.
I just tell the truth.
Does this mean I'm the only conservative left?
Yeah, conservative Canadian.
Conservative Canadian over there. We'll be back in 5 minutes. Stay with us.